Chapter 6. The curtain rattled back without warning, and there was Solette, eyeing Petra suspiciously. Petra gave thanks that she had instinctively gripped her rosary and would look as if she prayed. She followed the young woman back to the kitchen, carrying her guttering, smoking candle. She placed the candle with another on the table, and with the fire, the room seemed positively merry after the dank cell. For greater cheer, a hunk of yellow cheese now sat beside the coarse bread. Madame Goulard sat in a chair at the end, facing the fire, and waved Petra to a seat on the bench to her left. Jizzy sat on the other bench, still looking anxious. Petra smiled at her, but it didn't seem to help. The old woman ladled soup into bowls that Solette carried to the table, serving her mother first and then Petra. Petra thanked her, but she'd forgotten the smell of this brew. Perhaps a meat bone had been used when past its best. Perhaps the cook had tried to mask decay with extra herbs. Perhaps the old woman had lost her sense of smell. There was certainly a lot of sage, a herb best used in moderation, in Petra's opinion, but no one else showed any sign of minding. Once the soup was served, Solette helped her grandmother to hobble painfully to the empty chair opposite Madame Goulard, then sat beside her sister. When Monsieur Goulard was home, the chair at the head of the table would surely belong to him. "Perhaps you'd offer grace, sister." Madame Goulard's words pulled Petra away from the half-formed thought. Petra said a brief prayer of thanks for the food and also asked God for blessings on this household, for they surely needed them. Everyone picked up a wooden spoon and began to eat. Petra filled her spoon and took a mouthful, then had to force herself to swallow it. It must have a bushful of sage in it, and there was definitely an unpleasant taste beneath. She stirred it as the others ate with relish. Truly, local tastes were different. "Eat, eat," the old woman croaked, showing a few long, blackened teeth. Petra looked back at the stew, bracing herself to force it down as penance, but then a whole clove of garlic bobbed up. She remembered an unfortunate sister in the convent. "Oh, is there garlic in this?"
"Of course there's garlic," the crone said. "What's soup without garlic?"
"Yes, yes, but you see, I can't eat garlic. It makes me terribly ill."
"Garlic?" queried Madame Goulard. "How can anyone be ill by garlic? It's good food, sister. Eat."
That shot out like a command, but Petra put down her spoon, the focus now of unfriendly eyes. She felt bad, but she couldn't eat the stuff.
"Truly,"
she assured them, recalling Sister Beata's sufferings,
"it gives me terrible cramps and foul gases. You wouldn't want me in the house if I ate this."
After a tense moment, Madame Goulard waved toward the bread and cheese.
"Make up with that, sister."
Petra thanked her with true sincerity and sliced into the loaf, then cut a wedge of cheese. The bread was coarse and chewy, the cheese pungent, but she had to struggle not to gobble it. When the pear cider came around, she drank deeply and praised that too. Perhaps the mood eased, but apart from her thanks, everyone ate in silence. It was clearly their normal way, and in the convent meals had been silent, but Petra found herself longing to speak. She wasn't sure how long the family might sit here in silence, but once she'd eaten her fill, she used the soup as escape.
"Please excuse me. Even so little garlic has stirred my insides. I will retire to my room."
Madame Goulard's face was stony, but she said,
"The privy's in the yard, but the mud's bad. Jizzy, Give the Holy Sister a bowl.
Jizzy took a mixing bowl off a shelf and thrust it into Petra's hands. Petra thanked her, said, "Good night, and blessings upon you all," and escaped. Probably they were as pleased to see her go as she was to leave. Once through the curtain, Petra realized that she had no light, but she didn't want to return. The clouds must have cleared a little, for some moonlight enabled her to make her way past the bed to her dirty cubicle. Who slept where? Monsieur and Madame Goulard in the big bed, the grandmother and girls in the cells. Perhaps there were sons. She put the bowl down on the floor and sighed, going again to the window. The moon lightened the scene a little, but the night air was damp. She wouldn't look toward the warmth again. The rake would only take it as encouragement. How long must her strength last? Perhaps only one day. She had studied maps, and though Lady Sodworth would have taken 2 days from Arbeville to Boulogne, it was possible in one day if they left early and travelled long. The packet ship to England would leave in the evening. She could be in England on the day after tomorrow, if God would for once be kind. Then she had only to find her father. If only that were so easy. She knew the location of his various houses, but not where he was right now. He was an important person at court, so she'd assumed he'd be where the court was, but now it seemed that might not be so. She would check his London house first, and then the one in Hampshire. If she found him, there was always the risk that her father would deny her. Her mother had been adamant that he wouldn't, but with time Petra's faith in her mother's certainties had faded. Her mother had been ill and desperate, and thinking of a man she'd known more than 20 years ago. The only proof Petra had to offer him was a letter from her mother and a picture. A picture of an eye. Her mother had explained that such images had been the height of romance back then, especially in the whirling mysteries of a Venetian masquerade. Artists had sat in the streets ready to execute such miniatures on the spot, sometimes even without the sitter unmasking. To her mother it had been impossible that the then Lord Grafton would have forgotten her, but Petra had wondered all along. A young English lord travelling through Italy and Greece, supposedly for his education. How many liaisons had there been? How many were remembered weeks later, never mind decades? And even if he remembered, even if he believed the story, why should he embrace a bastard daughter who turned up out of nowhere? Petra sighed. She doubted all along. But this had been her only hope. Her brother was now the head of the family, and he had turned against her. Her other brother and sisters feared his displeasure, and once Cesare had revealed her paternity, they'd used that as excuse to ignore her mother's pleas. Her mother's family, far off in Austria, had fallen from favour and didn't have the resources to intervene. As for aristocratic Milan, she'd been foolish with Ludo, and not discreet enough. So when Cesare had let word spread that she was not his father's true daughter, most had shrugged, and said that being the acknowledged mistress of Il Conte di Puriere wasn't so bad a fate for one such as she. No one wanted to offend the Morcini, Ludo's family, least of all Cesare. He might be Il Conte di Baldino now, but he needed the alliance with the Morcini to pursue his ambitions. Politics, politics. She'd raged to her mother that politics and the ambitions of men could cripple her life, but her mother had been able to do nothing but shrug. She herself had been married to a foreigner she didn't love for political advantage. Politics. They had politics in England, too, and her father was deeply involved in such things. If he accepted her, would he see just a new pawn in his games? Could Ludo bring pressure to bear in England? Austria ruled Milan, and Austria had been Britain's enemy in the recent war, so she hoped not.
But could she be seen as an enemy?
Even aware of all these problems, she'd been sure that if her plan failed, she could find a place in a convent and take full vows. Anything was better than being Ludovico's whore. Now it seemed that wasn't possible, and she might have Vazzi in pursuit. Which meant she suddenly realized that she was putting Robin and his men in danger. That nursery rhyme came back to her. Who did kill Cock Robin? I, said the sparrow, with my bow and arrow. I did kill Cock Robin. She shivered from mental and physical exhaustion, feeling she'd sleep as soon as she lay down anywhere but here. Here, she was reluctant to lie on a dirty bed, but also strangely reluctant to surrender to oblivion. What? Did she think her hosts were going to creep in and murder her? She was no threat to them. She unpinned her veil from her cap, setting the pins in the grey cloth for storage, and then looked around for a place to put it. Not liking the look of any surface, she tucked it over her belt, remembering the Saint Veronica cloth. Perhaps tomorrow night she'd be able to wash that. She'd like to take off the belt and pouch, but again, there was nowhere to put it. She realized she'd put her bag containing soap and toothbrush down in the kitchen, along with her clean shift. She wasn't going back out there for them, and what was the point? She hadn't been offered washing water. She pulled her cloak completely around herself and lay on the bed, keeping her sandals on. Then she said a prayer against fleas and composed herself for sleep. Her mind jangled. What was it that had struck her as odd about the table? Stop it, Petra. The atmosphere here is strange because the poor women are terrified without their men. She sat bolt upright. Their men. This evening, with five people at the table, only one space had remained. Was there only one man in the family? Monsieur Goulard? No. There could be two, with a son to take her place on the bench. Whatever the truth of that, the man of the house would sit at the head of the table. So when he was home, where did the old woman sit? Petra doubted she could climb onto one of the benches. Hard to imagine Madame Goulard lowering herself to sit on one. The truth was, there were no men. They were women alone, poor things, which explained their poverty and fear. All was explained, and perhaps Robin could be especially generous to them tomorrow. Petra was awakened by muttering voices. Was it morning already? No, it was dark. Two or more people were talking in the kitchen, so she'd probably dozed off for only minutes. She huddled into her cloak and concentrated on sleep, but the voices warred with exhaustion. She rolled onto her back, wishing she could go out there and tell them to shut up. Was it the young women sharing secrets, or Madame Goulard complaining to her mother about the visiting nun who wouldn't eat garlic and insisted on keeping the window unshuttered? Petra pulled her hood over her ears to block the sound, but her mind wouldn't calm. It insisted there was something wrong about those voices, something suspicious. Grumbling to herself, she rose and went to the curtain. She eased it back an inch and the voices became a little louder, but she still couldn't understand a word. The room beyond was dark, but a bit of light leaked around the edges of the curtain. The big bed looked empty. They were all still up. "They have a right to sit by their fire talking," she told herself. "Go back to sleep." But she couldn't. Ready with the excuse of wanting her things, she slipped across the bedroom and up to the left-hand curtain.
"One of you, make sure that..."
Petra couldn't understand the last word, but it had been the old woman's raspy voice.
"Course they are."
That might be Solette.
"There was enough."
Another unknown word.
"To make them sleep for a week."
Petra's breath caught. Them could only be the men. They'd given them something to make them sleep. She wasn't drugged, but she'd eaten only a mouthful of that strange soup. Everyone at the table had eaten from the same pot, but the old woman had ladled it into bowls and Solette had delivered them. Could there have been something extra in the one delivered to her? Something from that pouch? But why? It could be because they were afraid and wanted the men to sleep deeply in the night, but that didn't explain their current conversation. Madame Goulard was talking now in such a rapid, low voice and heavy accent, Petra couldn't understand a word, but it sounded unpleasant. "Think, Petra, think!" She remembered the persistent questions about Robin's wealth. He'd said that the French thought all Englishmen were made of gold. The woman had mentioned Coquette's collar. Had these impoverished women decided a treasure had fallen into their hands and planned to steal from the sleeping men? They'd have to be mad. Tomorrow the theft would be discovered, and as soon as they reached the next town... Her imagination skidded to a halt. Unless they weren't to be allowed to reach the next town. "Saint Peter aid us." It seemed unbelievable, but Petra had heard of travellers disappearing without a trace. She retreated shakily to her cell, struggling to think over a racing heart. If the sleeping draught had been in the soup, the women knew she hadn't eaten much. They'd know she'd cry the alarm if anything happened to the rest of her party. But they wouldn't need to drug her to kill her. Three strong women against one, with the old woman to help if necessary. Petra fingered the shape of the dagger in her pouch, but doubted it could hold them all off. With a shudder, she remembered the big knife on the table that had cut so easily through chewy bread and hard cheese. Saint Peter aid them all. Then yelling made her almost leap out of her skin. But it was only Madame Goulard yelling at Solette, and Solette screaming back. Then a door slammed. Solette had finally done as she was told, but clearly none of them expected the men to be awake. Or alive?